gone. Jason, I'm sorry that I'm an hour late.
Go on, it's fine. I'll allow it.
I really hurt my ankle, and I just didn't know if I was going to be able to make it to today's podcast. But you know, I wanted to power through for the listeners and for you, and you know, for everybody kind of out there.
Chris, what did I tell you about riding that bicycle? You knew it. You knew you weren't strong on two wheels like I am.
Luckily it was one of those very, very chic electric bikes that you see people kind of scooting around New York in, a Van Moof.
Sure.
I did get my Tom Sachs Nike lace caught in the pedal, and it kind of...
Oh, Jesus.
You know what I mean? I wrapped my ankle up, so I'm sorry that I'm late, and I'm sorry to keep everybody waiting. I know it's a little chilly out there. I think it's going to be worth it, and I hope you
think
the same thing.
It's fine, I guess, but like, we could still do the ice skating bit, right?
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah, we could still... I hope you have 5 to 6 Jersey Club remixes of How Long Gone kind of ready to go.
Obviously, I do. Obviously, you know that I do.
you've been beasting in the lab, so I know you're ready to rock. So if you could just kind of... You could kind of play those while I kind of elevate, while I rice my ankle. That'd be really helpful.
We don't subscribe to the rice method on this podcast. Movement heals us, Chris. Okay, movement is my ibuprofen.
Okay, thank you, Huberman, once again for coming through with the good advice for the bod. But yes, I mean, I don't want to dwell on this too much, but that's false. Your favorite. Frank Ocean did bomb at Coachella, and I can't say I'm not getting a little joy out of it. You know, I just think that the I saw somebody tweet today. It was a retweet, and it said, you know, Frank Ocean injury at Coachella, you know, prevented him from performing, blah blah blah, and the retweet said, "I'm heading to the gay excuses store. Does anybody need anything?" Which really made me laugh.
Yeah, I did see that. That was a good one. And also, I saw some other people mentioning, like, "Hey, you know, that's a cute excuse. You hurt your ankle." But, you know, many other performers, I think SZA's name was brought up, like, she did she hurt her ankle a couple of days before a show. She had to do the show in heels.
Bro.
Not, like, hospital slippers like Frankie did.
Bro, I mean, curse Dave Grohl is out there with a fucking full leg cast on, playing fucking, you know.
Yeah, but he has dude. Frank should have made like a sick Game of Thrones style hip hop seat for him, like a hip hop wheelchair.
Yeah.
An emotional found object lo-fi trip hop wheelchair. Wheel him out.
Lo-fi trip hop wheelchair.
But also, he was on stage doing anything but singing into a microphone. He was moving, he was swaying, he wasn't necessarily doing a Ray Sremmurd style.
No.
Power glide, anything like that. But he was moving. He was on his feet. I didn't see any sign of injury.
He wasn't doing. Yeah, I mean, the injury is obviously a lie. I mean, I don't think that anybody.
What?
I don't think anybody believes that Frank Ocean sprained his ankle. He doesn't like to perform. He clearly needed the, you know, $5 to $6 million to fund his jewelry operation, and I think that's fine. I mean, I get it. Like, take the check, but you got to deliver. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't...
Okay.
Doing something for the money is completely acceptable as long as you get it. Like, these fans love this guy so much, he could have fucking laid in a sleeping bag with it zipped all the way up as long as he sang the songs.
Yeah.
But he couldn't even sing the songs, which is... It's truly... And then there's this other line of thinking now that, like... You guys demand too much from artists. He's emotional about his brothers. I'm like, I don't care about any of that. Like, if you're getting paid $5 million to play for an hour, you go up there and you play for an hour for $5 million, or you say no. What does this have to do with your brother? This has nothing to do with your brother. This has nothing to... I don't know. I mean, that's obviously sad, but that's not part of the equation when it comes to being paid to perform.
Yeah, and when there are... personal family emergencies in your life and real things that happen to you, that's a normal part of being a performer in the world, and all you do is say no to the performance.
Yeah, it's very simple.
That's all you have
to do.
Is just
say
no.
Don't feel prepared to do it, then don't do it. and maybe spend a little less money on your architecture firm that hasn't, you know what I mean? That's it. I just don't, it just doesn't say, I don't understand like why. It's just so amazing how we kind of rewrite the rules depending on the person if we really like them. You know what I mean? And we all do it. We all like, I will do it. You will do it. I'm not doing it for Frank Ocean, but I'm doing it for somebody.
Yeah.
You know,
of
and
course,
I just think it's like, you know, and I think it's pretty, I think it's amazing what the sacrifices and kind of blind eyes we are willing to turn for someone we love, no matter what they do in the public eye.
Yeah. I mean, I do sympathize for people who feel like they're pressured to perform when it's something that they really, really are uncomfortable doing. And that does suck. And I'm sure it's a thing that, you know, you could see every performer on stage at Coachella, like, I made a Ray Sherman reference, like you could tell looking in the both of their eyes, they do not want to be up here lip singing their songs. They're not having a good time. They're only doing it for the money, but they also know like, hey man, all I really have to do is lip sync my own music that I wrote for like 37 minutes and I'm going to get a check. You know, I'll buy a house with this money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just put on a smile and do it. There's a sea of people who love you and really want to sing along to your songs and create a magical moment for the rest of your life, and you just kind of get through it. And that's all. Even if you can't do that, just say no to the money.
That's the thing. It's like we can't. I mean, I'm not, you know, this is one of the I have to say one of the easiest jobs as far as work to pay ratio goes. And I mm-hmm. think that has to, I'm not saying it's not hard to do. Obviously it is, and especially to do it well. But like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
Like, how can you expect any regular person to feel any empathy towards you when they have to go to a regular job every day? It's insane. It's like insane. You can't expect, like, there's no way.
Well, he might not expect any empathy, but the question that I saw being raised a little bit on the industry insider chats and discords is, will he even be asked to come and perform weekend two? Or is it a wrap, and are they going to replace him with somebody? If so, who do you think it'll be?
I mean, hopefully they replace him. I mean, I would be like, get out of here. We'll give you, even if they give him all the money because of the way the contract is structured, like Coachella should respect themselves enough to get this guy out of here after that monstrosity.
Yeah.
You know?
50% kill fee, get it done with, write him a check for fucking 4.5 and just go and book fucking... Who would be the wise choice to replace him? I'm trying to think.
Honestly, I hate to say this, but I think you got to move Blink 182 into his slot. No. I hate to say it, but I think I swear to God, dude. The most positive. I mean, I saw a bunch of people being like, Blink 182 sucks, which like, of course they suck, but they're also good. I don't know what that means. And I don't know what I'm saying, but they suck and they're also good. It's confounding to say the least.
No, I mean, just like any of your favorite Below Deck Bravo television shows. You know it sucks, but also it good. That's just what it is.
I'll say this. I don't care about Blink 182. Like, I, you know, whatever. It's there. But those motherfuckers look like they were having the time of their lives. And that, to me, is honestly, they looked truly like they were having a blast. There's nowhere else they would rather be. The fans were losing their fucking minds. Like, that's what you need from a headliner, Jason. And like, you know, I if it's not Beyonce with like 2 hours of hits,
we must have been watching a different performance,
bro. They suck, but they look like they were having fun. Like the fact that what's his name was singing into a fucking, he had so much auto tune it sounded like a vocoder. But like,
yeah.
But it doesn't matter because it just doesn't matter. Like, that's not, everybody grew up with those songs, so it's like it kind of just works, you know.
Not everybody. I think that's the issue here. Everybody that you and I know grew up with their songs, everybody who's, you know, let's say 30 and up, but all the people at Coachella, you could see the energy. There's all these 19-year-old people there who are kind of like, oh, my dad listened to Blink-182. That's kind of cool, like classic rock vibes. And they're performing as if it's still 1996. And they're making these weird dad jokes that are like jokes about like farting and getting your dick sucked. And they're like 50 years old. And to me, the energy was quite dark. And Travis Barker never looks like he's having fun. He has like severe onstage social anxiety. He's talked about that. And it was just two old guys making like the creepy uncle.
Okay, would
jokes.
You rather watch that, and, or would you rather
and singing with auto?
Or would you rather watch Frank Ocean jump up and down with an Arc'teryx jacket on and slippers, not singing at all? That's the. Unfortunately, that's what we're dealing with here. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying we don't have a great option. You know what I mean? But I felt a little more joy in the hearts of Mark Hoppus and Tom DeLonge than I did in the heart of Frank Ocean.
Yeah, well, that's you've grown up listening to Blink-182 and you openly despise Frank Ocean, so that really comes as no surprise.
Yeah, but I don't care, but I think I know Blink-182 is bad. Like, I didn't grow up listening to Blink-182. I grew up when Blink-182 was popular. Mm-hmm. I think that's a better way to put it. You know what I mean? So it's just, but I understand what you mean, but I also think that, like, the nostalgia factor is what festivals are built on, and it's a combination of algorithm and and nostalgia. Those are the two factors that get a band on the bill at a place like Coachella. So I think that, like, if you don't fit one of those two categories, then you're so small on the flyer I can't read your name.
Well, out of the three headliners of Coachella, which one would be a nostalgia act?
That's what I'm saying. Those are all algorithm.
Okay.
Those are all, okay. That's what I mean. Like, those are all algorithm because that's like the biggest slots to fill. Like,
okay. So it's like you have that, and then it's like, oh, here's the blonde redhead set, yeah. Or like whatever, you know, some old band, you know, Sonic Youth or something.
Yeah,
like
totally.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. They do all of it. And then there's like all the stuff in the middle that, like, you know, is fine, but it's been an interesting Sunday. Was a rough day. I mean, the Love is Blind finale was supposed to be live. It just never aired. Netflix fucked up.
I'm sorry.
So it was a tough day for me all around. I'm glad that we're here and we're able to podcast today.
Yeah, bright and early on a Tuesday morning. I haven't had a chance to do any exercise yet, so I'm going to be coming at you with anxious energy. Hopefully our guest is going to be okay with that.
I
haven't worked out my Tuesday scares yet, but looks like our guest is here on the Zoom, so why don't we take a break, pay a couple bills, and come back with our guest, Jason Nocito, a wonderful photographer that we are both fans of, and we're lucky to have him on the show, so let's give him a Zoom.
Let's give him a jingle. Hey, Jason, we all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on. You're eating at restaurants you don't want to eat at all the time to appease myself and others.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to your health, there's no compromise, so don't go back to that one doctor who used your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines, their family group chat, their crossword puzzles, just because they're available right now or because they take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. And you can search by location, availability, and insurance, so literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know.
ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors very close to you and instantly book appointments with them online. Just like when I'm looking for new shoes on my sites, you can filter specifically, see which doctors take your insurance, located near you, maybe find a doctor that's far away from you for personal reasons you don't want to disclose.
I use ZocDoc, and you should too.
Go to ZocDoc.com/howlong and download ZocDoc for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/howlong. ZocDoc.com/howlong.
The best way to learn a language? Immersion, living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off your list with Babbel.
Chris and I are going to the country of Georgia in a month or so, and they have a very unique language, and I will be using Babbel to try and just get a little bit of action so I can know how to order my cold brew lattes and things like that in a way that's actually science-based. Don't spend hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Use Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons. They're handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new lingo in as little as 3 weeks.
Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/howlong. Get 55% off at babbel.com/howlong, spelled B-A-B-B-E-L.com/howlong. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Babbel.
the video on this new iPad follows me.
What do you mean? It's like,
Yeah. I've seen that shit on like commercials for it, and it's like grandparents talking to their kids on their iPad, and it's moving with them.
It's cool, but it's annoying for me.
Why does that? What is the point of that? Is it just to make it more compelling to the person you're conversing with? Like, what is the idea?
Well, I mean, it actually like looks cool, but fuck if I know.
I think the idea is they figured out they can do it, so we're gonna do it.
Yeah,
it's like a cool yeah, thing sure, that we could sure, sell, sure. And also, you know,
it's amazing.
I think from what I've seen on commercials, it's usually like grandkids talking to the grandparents, and the grandparents who are sort of like, why do I use point this thing? I don't know where, you know, like who don't know how to use it. It's just it's like grandma proof. Yeah, like, is this thing on?
Yeah.
Type of energy, you know?
I didn't know you were an iPad guy. You want to kind of explain yourself?
Yeah. I mean, like I walked in the store to buy a pen for my old iPad that I had for a long time. And then all of a sudden I was buying a new iPad and trading in the old iPad that was worth $100. So
you got a nice little credit. You got a nice little credit. Wouldn't even buy you the pen.
But
wouldn't
I even love, buy you the pen if I you wanted love to. It. I it's corny, but I love it. It's like kind of,
do you think this is partly because you're a father and the iPad is such a big part of child rearing?
No.
Okay. Do you bring the iPad to Dallas Barbecue so the little kid can have something to... Okay.
I've never been to... Yeah, no. But no, I just like... It's easier than getting on my laptop.
Yeah, I feel like I'll be there sooner than later.
It's cool.
But you do use it to edit photos and stuff? Like professional shit?
No, I don't use... I don't edit my photos. Like, yeah, not on an iPad. I mean, I do a lot of work on it. Like there's this Fresco program that's pretty good, and I just fuck around on that a lot. And that I do use with my kid because she kind of goes off on stuff.
What is the Fresco program? This sounds like one of Jason's little restaurants.
Sounds like how I'm gonna get a new start with the future of my tax break.
That's a cool joke. Do you bring that to Equinox? Is that your Knox jug?
I throw it up. I watch Succession on the Stairmaster with my iPad Fresco.
My fucking Fresco on my jug.
My jug.
I'd be jugging at Equinox. That is,
you got jug.
Okay, so it's a painting app. So you can with the pen or with your finger, or how do you do it?
Yeah. With this pen.
Okay.
You know?
You're a pen
and
guy.
And your finger.
I've used the pen before and I was shocked at the accuracy. Like, it's really good.
It's so good.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's stupid. I don't want to make this
TikTok?
Like an Apple.
You don't want to make this a keynote presentation.
I don't want to make this the keynote.
You've made enough money off Apple, I'm sure. We don't need to advertise.
I've never worked for Apple. I've never worked for them.
We'll make some calls.
Yeah. Call your friends. Call Tim. Say what's up.
Call Tim. See what
Chris
he's
met
up to.
Tim at a recent GQ party, so I'm sure he can pull some strings.
Did you meet him there?
Just send over your portfolio.
No, Jason was at the same party. I didn't. They don't let me anywhere near Tim Apple. No. I'll tell you what. Will Welch was gatekeeping.
Oh my god. And I was like, when I first walked in and I saw he was there, I was like, yo, the security must be bananas at this party. Like,
that's what that was my first question.
Presidential level.
We talked about this. I think there was like one, I think there's, it's, it is presidential level in the sense that there's like one guy that you see and there's five guys you don't see.
And the whole place has got stuff everywhere and surveillance and we're all like, you know, everything's being filmed and whatever.
I mean, I wonder.
I don't care.
I wonder because I guess he is, I mean, he's got to be top five. I don't know. I mean, I know he's really powerful, but at the same time, like, I don't know. I don't think of him that way.
He's chill,
but I guess
right?
He's got to be protected.
Yeah, he was. I mean, yeah, the fact that he was there.
He seems very chill, but
was like,
if I'm in the business of kidnapping motherfuckers, he's high on the list. You know what
or
I mean?
Just destroying shit, or just disrupting shit. You just be like, we fucked up. We fucked up this GQ party with Tim Cook. It was he's done.
Yeah, simply a disruptor in the industry.
That party, you know what? I'm not also not going to smoke too much of people's butt, but that was like, I was dreading that event, you know, and I love Will, and I've known him since he was an intern at the Fader.
Wow.
And, but I had fun, and I was not expecting to have fun. I was like, oh, God.
Well, I had fun, too. No, we talked about it. I had fun, too.
And we did, right? All right, yeah, right.
I went to visit, so my buddy owns that building. Whoa. And I went to go visit it yesterday.
Oh, wow.
And he's turning it into this whole thing. It's like it's going to have offices and a hotel and a pool and the whole thing. But being in there without anything going on is insane, because it's the old AIG building. So it's like, and they kind of just like left. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. It feels a little bit like
left a bunch of boxes with papers in them and stuff like that.
You go into like rooms and there's just giant TVs and teleprompters and desks and chairs, and they left all this stuff. So it was like it's an eerie kind of blown out. But that floor where the party was, they just kind of demolished it and put that carpet down and built the stage, and that's where the event was. It was really
awesome.
I know, it's a good use of the space.
How do you own that building? How do you end up owning that building?
That's a great question, Jason. I don't ask the tough questions in those situations, because I'm more there as a just a
observer.
Kind of an innocent bystander.
Yeah, you're an observer.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't want to ruffle any feathers. I'm here to take photos from my Tumblr and get in and get out.
Yeah.
I don't ask any questions.
Exactly. I'm here to get in
and
get out.
Do you still post to Tumblr? Are you a Tumblr guy?
I post a Tumblr every day. Yeah, so every day, cool. All the time.
That's cool.
I think it's, I just don't like, I just find it to be really simple to use. That's really what it is. It's just the easiest thing to use.
Yeah.
Kind of like an iPad.
Do you look at it all the time, or do you just like dump it? It's like an iPad.
No, but I've said this before. I dump it, but I've said this before. I think that I've gone through phases where kind of like end of the year, you know, with some downtime, I'll scroll back pretty far and I can go mentally to exactly where I was.
So cool.
During the times.
That's great.
You know, and it really works. It really works.
Juxtaposition to Instagram, like what's the relationship to that? Because Instagram's just a dump.
There's no feedback. Like Tumblr is literally just me talking to myself.
Sure.
And people see it, of course, but there's no comments. There's no like. I mean, there is, but it's not part of the experience in the same way, I think.
Yeah.
Actually, Jason, I was listening to a podcast that you appeared on about 5 years ago. You are actually talking about this, and it was kind of interesting to hear, because it was just 5 years ago, 2018, but so much has changed on social media since then in your world of photography since then. And you were saying like, it's crazy, Instagram has almost started to replace my Tumblr as like a place to use as my like portfolio for my work. It was right when like photography and photographers started using Instagram seriously as their main portfolio of work. And you were talking about how pre that you would use Instagram for your like weirdo fucked up just kind of random pictures, and then you were starting to remove those and replace them with images of, you know, models and celebrities that people will like and love more. So you know, how much do you think your opinion on all that stuff has changed in the last 5 years?
I thought this was the first podcast I ever did. But that's number one. Like, I don't remember that. And I mean, I think it's still like early Instagram was a dump in a fun way, you know, like, and people weren't clocking you. And obviously we know how it is now. I mean, it's like, it's also kind of, I just don't play it the way that I think some people do. I'm very hesitant to sort of play it. I like stories, like, you know, whatever, garbage stories.
Yeah.
But it's also, it does have some, I do use it more for work than I would prefer.
It's just how the nature of the business goes.
Yeah, I'm not going to fight it. And I don't do it a lot. I feel like at most I'll post one or two posts about a thing that I did, you know, and then it's also like you have to clean it up all the time. I feel like you're always like going back and being like, all right, I can get rid of this now. It lives on a website or it lives on my agent's site.
Pruning.
So it's not really, I'm pruning that thing constantly. So it's weird, because what's the future of it, right? Like, where's it going to go? Is it just going to be this? I mean, you know, do websites ever come back with much relevance? I don't know. Like, for photography, does photography have relevance after, you know, you can throw a couple of my images into AI, you know, whatever company I've worked with in the past, they have all my images. They can be like, we want a picture like this. And they just dump it in there and like type it up. I mean, you know, is that the future of that thing? I don't know.
Yeah, you're definitely fucked. But I mean, well, you know.
But also, I think the same thing for what we do. We have hundreds and hundreds of hours of us talking, and anyone can type that into a computer, and AI can have a podcast, the perfect podcast with our voices saying every single word in the world.
Is that true? They can do that, right? Like, I mean, they're doing it with music.
Absolutely. If there's enough reference material, you know, like Howard Stern or like any people who have just said every single word for decades, you know, like you can just upload that person and type it in, you know, Eminem or Jay-Z, any of these people, and you can have them say whatever you want perfectly.
So crazy.
So we're all kind of fucked.
Yeah. Exactly. But then again, we'll see. More will be revealed, as they say.
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing that just happened with the Drake Weekend song. Like, they created this Drake Weekend song. It got like 300,000 streams before they took it down because people thought
it was better than any Drake song that's come out in a number of years. Is the problem.
So it's either like you either wanted to hear it for the novelty of it or you thought it was real, but either way, like Universal had to go in and like that's get nuts. It removed.
Yeah. And the same thing can happen with your photography though, Jason, because you can have some super fan random person on, you know, in Zimbabwe for all you know, and they're gonna be like, I miss the old Nocito when he did stuff like this.
Yeah.
You know, he sucks now, but he, you know, in 2019, he was sick. And
I like his early stuff.
And they're going to be like, create artwork just like this from his best era, in my opinion. And that could take off and become huge, you know?
Yeah.
And that could be good for your career.
You know what? It's never taken off and become huge. So I don't think any time in the future it's ever going to
take off. We're still waiting.
We're still waiting. Like, but you know what? I've also had a blessed I've been really fortunate to get I have fun. I like, you know, whatever. I hope it doesn't go away because I love it still somehow.
Are you grateful that as somebody who is a image maker that you're able to just post images that you've made versus having to post images of yourself on social media?
I mean, I did. I think the first wave of my Instagram was a lot of selfies, right?
Well, we don't call them when we're professional shutter bugs. Don't call them selfies, Jason. They're called self-portraits.
Self-portraits. It's true. Yeah, like Lee Friedlander.
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna say there's a lot of great references here.
Inspired by Lee Friedlander.
It's cool to teach you something actually on this show, Jason. It's awesome.
Yeah, like I'm open. I'm open to learning. I'm still open to learning.
Well, you started in a time where, you know, the Instagram was not even part of the conversation. Obviously, it was like you had to bring the book with the photos printed to the meetings.
Dude, I dropped off my book at Spin Magazine from 1999 to 2003 before I ever got a call back. One time, the photo editor put a note and said, I like this picture. In like 2001. And then I was like, you know,
thanks for that feedback.
And I was like, oh my God.
And that was just Spin Magazine, not necessarily photography hub of the world.
And then I did my first job with them. I shot AFI in Vegas. Sick. And they hired me, but I was so broke. I had no credit card. No, my license was expired. Like, and they were like, how are you going to get to the shoot? I was like, I don't know. And they like had to, they were so annoyed when they said that thing, but it was sick. And then I got on set and the manager was a fucking asshole. He's this guy, Steve Martin. He was the guitar player of Agnostic Front.
Oh, wait, shit. The guitar player from Agnostic Front managed AFI?
I'm pretty sure. I might be, you know.
No, that sounds right.
I'm turning
right.
50 in a month, but like.
That's something that AFI would do to like keep it real.
But he was a jerk to me, let alone I'm sure I was like, filthy and smelled, and he was like, why is this guy, like, who is this guy? But he was being a jerk, and then he forgot his bag in the back of the taxi when we went to the club, and he lost all his shit. And I was like, well, you should have been a little nicer. You know,
I thought you're gonna say he lost his bag in the cab, I found it and got it back to him, and then he started liking me again. But instead, you're like, karma's a bitch, dumbass.
I wasn't that guy. I was like, you know.
You happy bitch, now? Bro. See what happens when you're not nice to JC?
See what happens when you're not nice, bro? You got to be nice. Be nice to everybody. And, but yeah, that was my first. Yeah, it was a different time.
So did you just hitchhike to Vegas? How'd you get there with no?
They bought me a flight. They had to pay for, whatever.
Was this pre 9/11?
No, this is post 9/11.
Okay.
9/11 was like, it's funny. Like I
don't think it's very funny at all.
No, it's not funny. But yeah, anyway, just kidding, it doesn't even matter. Who cares? 9/11 was fun. Were you guys in the city for 9/11? Or are you guys too young for?
I wasn't alive.
9/11.
Yeah, Jason's really.
I was in Orange County.
I was in Atlanta. Oh, I hadn't moved to New York yet. I was in Atlanta.
Got it.
And you were in New York when it happened, right?
I was like squatting in this basement on 17th Street, and it wasn't a squat but I was squatting, you know, and I, it was the first night I stayed there, and I had this little radio that I had from my childhood that I carried with me everywhere. And I listened to Howard Stern. It was like an alarm clock. And I was like an obsessive Howard Stern fan for most of my, sure, up until the pandemic, when he just, you know, I think it kind of,
like any good New Yorker.
Yeah. And so I woke up and it was like Howard Stern was talking about these things, like the towers, a plane flew in. And I like was like, what the fuck? And I walked outside and watched the first building go collapse, damn, you know? And it was surreal, man. It was like, I remember looking at everybody in the street just like crying and jets flying over and like whatever, you know? And I was like, what now? But like in a weird way, it was like all of like this new journey in my life, like, It was wild.
I just don't. We've had a few people. I feel like we've talked to a few people that were in New York at the time and heard some crazy stories. But it's also like the, it's funny, like every year I feel like the photos surface from that. Like the, I think there's a Tim Barber one that's, yeah, like
the same one for that, I love Tim, but it's, yeah, the there's, same
there's
one.
There's a, yeah, Tim. Yeah, there's a Tim Barber one that comes up, yeah, and then there's, I think there's like a, who's the, there's one with Jason Dill in it.
Ooh,
but he didn't take the photo. It's like Jason Dill. You're like, it's like a young Jason Dill staring right at the camera and the fucking Twin Towers coming down behind him. It's insane.
So fucking crazy. And Peter Sutherland posts one. Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a wild, you know, everybody knows it was a wild time. I mean, I thought when the pandemic happened, I was like, oh, it's just going to be like, it's not going to be as bad as that. Like 3 years later.
Did you stay in the city?
So I had just like, you know, when I had a kid, I kind of went crazy. In a good, like, home building way, you know? And I had been looking in LA at houses for a long time, but I finally found a place in like May of 2019. So I bought a house there. Not sure if we were going to live there, but maybe we'd try to live there for a couple months. And my wife's a nurse, you know, and she had 6 months sabbatical. And so we eventually made our way out there. We've had our apartment in the city for a long time. And I was like, we can go stay at the house in LA. And while this is happening, rather than renting a place and see what the vibe in LA is. So we did that, and it was October, and like January came around and the apartment was done. And I was like, let's just ride it out. We're having a good time out here. It's fun. The weather, it's so nice, you know? And then I was like busy, and like March, mid-March came, and I got off a plane and got home, and it was lockdown. And I was like, all right, I guess we're going to stay for a while. And it was like July, and we were both like, we have to get out of here, because this is like, you know, LA, I don't know where you guys were, but LA for me was overwhelming in the way of like the quiet and like the insanity, like the helicopters and the way that the homeless thing just like visually was like kind of, you know, and during the pandemic, all of that for me was just like, I just wasn't vibing it. And I think I had been there.
Where is this? Hold on. Where is this house? First of all, what neighborhood are we talking about?
In between Echo Park and Silver Lake.
Okay. So it's, yeah, like, sure, on sure.
North Coronado.
Is it done? Is this house? So you like lived in this house?
We lived in it. Or it's not done? Then, no, it's not done. We lived in it. And then for the next year, I was like, well, people are not going to fly me out here, you know, to work. So I kept it for that year. You know, I was like, and I'd go back and forth. I'd be in LA for 2 weeks. I'd be back home for a week. I'd go to LA for a month. It was like that vibe, you know, when things started like opening up a little bit for work. But at the same time, I asked my friend, you want to live with me? Like, so I got a roommate, you know, 48-year-old dude with a roommate. And then you know, a year went by and I was like, all right, like, wait a minute, there's another person living here now. And like, you know, and there's another person with him living here now. And I was like, and my kid's starting to notice I'm gone all the time. Like, maybe I should like switch it up. And I just like,
you're like, who ate my yogurt?
It was like exactly. I was like, who the fuck ate my granola? Why do you eat all my peanut butter, man? But I was like, literally my kid started having, like, I started noticing like she was having a hard time. And
yeah.
Partly my fault for not like being like, all right, I'm going to be gone for 10 days, you know? And I and she would be like, every time you leave, I think you're like, when we figured it out, she started crying and she was like, every time you leave, I think you're going to be gone forever. And I was like, all right. I have somebody to think about in a different way now.
Daddy's going to go hang out with Ariana Grande for 10 days, okay? Have fun.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm gonna
be good to your mommy.
Me and the Kid Leroy are going to the beach today.
Sweetie, do you know who the Kid Leroy is? He has a big song with Justin Bieber. He has a big song.
You'll love it. But she's not true. I don't think she likes Leroy. I love Leroy, but I'm not sure she's a fan. She likes like 100 Gecs. She likes 100 Gecs. That's her jam.
Well, how old is she?
This is a small child. I see you with a stroller.
She's 4 and a half. Going to be 4 and a half in a couple of months. Yeah, but she's
100 Gecs is music for 4-year-olds. It does really, kind of.
It cuts. It checks out. As the kids say, it hits.
It hits. It's a visceral reaction.
Unfortunately, 100 Gecs is something that I should really hate on paper, but listen to it, but I appreciate it. Think it's good.
But I also may have the worst taste. I like everything, but I might have the worst taste. I mean, I listen to emo rap. Like
what kind?
Suicide Boys.
You listen to Suicide Boys?
I love Suicide Boys. My wife, like at first I was like sus. And then I was talking to my friend Kelifa and he was making fun of me because I was like, what about the Suicide? He's like, I can't listen to that. You know? And I was like, bro, it's good. And then we went to go see, it live. And I was like, pretty good, you know, pretty good show.
I watched them on the Coachella live stream. And I literally texted my Jason being like, bro, what the fuck? Like, I didn't know it was like that. I didn't know they looked like this.
Suicide Boys look like if Insane Clown Posse hired you to CD them is kind of what the vibe is.
it's definitely like, I'm not going to deny it, but also a couple weeks ago, we went to go see Show Me the Body.
Yeah.
Like I grew up into hardcore. Like first show was like Bad Brains and Leeway in like 1988 or something like that. 86. I don't know.
He's legit.
Bro, I'm old school. Bro.
I mean, first show being Bad Brains and Leeway.
Yeah,
that's
first
about
show
as,
being bad. Yeah,
that's about as new Joel hardcore as it gets, bro.
Warzone, Leeway, Bad Brains, SNFU at the Ritz in 86. And it was insane.
I'm a big Warzone guy, actually. And I
are you?
Big Warzone guy. I love Warzone. And but a lot of that, some of that stuff I didn't like. I don't know why Warzone connected with me.
It's so bad.
Oh, it's awful. No, it's awful. I mean, it's crazy. were you ever straight edge?
Oh yeah, no? I was straight edge from 13 to 16. You know, and like before that wasn't straight edge. I got high really young. You know, like I started using when I was like 9 years old.
Started using what? Ninja Turtles?
Yeah. I had a kind of strange upbringing. I have my dad had 9 kids in the end, and like maybe 10. Okay. You know, we don't know. And then but you know, I grew up in sort of a feral situ, you know, like kind of.
Okay.
And my mom worked at a bar, so it was a little bit like there was that kind of situation. Everything was available, and like and I just landed on, you know, something early. And then by the time I was like 13, I had gotten kicked out of middle school and like to put into this crazy publicly funded school the guy who was running the school had embezzled all the money. He was embezzling all the money, so you show up to the school. There was like no books, and the teachers were like, there was like vagueness. Like I remember,
like in Florida,
one of the teachers looking back, like she had a black eye when she came in one time, and she always smelled like of alcohol. And you were always like, but I went there and I was like kind of into drugs and partying, and then I met this straight edge dude, and I was like, fuck this, I'm straight edge, and went straight edge and got into hardcore. Like, I was into punk before that. Hated metal. Still kind of do.
I still hate metal. I still hate metal too. I mean,
you pussies.
Straight edge was so appealing at that. Straight edge was so appealing at the time. I think for like
totally.
You know, for many reasons, obviously. But I think it like
yeah, like stylistically, musically, like it was like a whole thing. And like also, I always wanted to connect to people. But the weird thing about being straight edge. I mean, I didn't have the tools to connect. I wasn't really like, it didn't help me bond with any other people. So like.
Being straight edge didn't get you laid is what you're saying.
Yeah. Exactly. It didn't get me any more friends. I'll put it to you that way.
You didn't experience any bonds of friendship.
I didn't bond. I didn't bond with a lot of the people. And then within a few years, I was back at it, you know, and it was like, it was like fall off the cliff. And it was like, it wasn't like a gradual, yeah, it was like, eh, yeah, you know, yeah, like,
I went from straight edge. I went straight into cocaine, which is kind of my claim to fame. I didn't drink. I didn't even drink for 6 months. Just did raw dog coke. For 6 months, which is kind of
rough.
It's just so strange to think about now, but yeah. But I don't, I mean, that once everybody got to that age though, it's, I mean, now of course I know plenty of fucking lifers. I know plenty of guys my age, yeah, and your age that are still straight edge, you know what I mean? But it's,
yeah,
but it's
still the same. Yeah.
You know, and it's a strain. I needed to have that 10 years of fucking up before I had to get sober, but I can't imagine being the 50-year-old guy in the construction gloves.
I needed like 30 years or 20 or whatever it was, you know, just like,
I need a good 30.
This isn't unmanageable. I don't have a place to live, or, you know, like living in that kind of like that.
Sure. Big. Well, were you able, but you were getting it done like work wise.
Well, not for a long time, but I think in that place that I was living in that basement, the thing that kind of like put a fire under my ass is I had no place to live. Like, eventually what happened is somebody that was working on the top floor slit his wrists and jumped out the window and landed outside my window.
What?
Right? And then they had to drag the body through this room that they didn't know was a bedroom when they came through, and they destroyed everything in my room because they had to break in, and it was really gnarly. And at that point, like, it was pretty, my life, it had hit another, a different bottom, and I stopped using sort of hard drugs at that time and just like, yeah, you know, kept it light, you know?
Cali sober.
Cali's, yeah. Not Cali sober, but like, you know, not, you know, whatever.
New York sober is just whiskey and cocaine, actually. That's what we call
exactly.
It.
Exactly. Yeah, whiskey.
I smoke cigarettes and I huff a little paint, but that's all.
Yeah. And then like that turned it around a little bit, and I like was like, I got to make a living and be able to have a place to live. Like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
And like, it coincided with little things happening in my career, but like, I didn't get solid till about 2005. And then I had met my wife in 2003 in Vancouver with Tim Barber. He actually is probably I owe him half my life, but like, I was out there living with him because I was like kind of trying to figure out what to do. And we drove back cross country. But when I was out there, it was my birthday. And she just like came up to me and was like, took me home, you know? And I was like, whoa.
Took one look at you and said, I could fix him. I could fix this motherfucker.
I had a nausea t-shirt on. I was wearing my nausea t-shirt. She was like, yeah, nausea. And I'm like,
really? Wow.
I think this is maybe the first time I've ever heard of a woman approaching a man because of a nausea t-shirt. So yeah, congratulations.
Nausea shirt has never gotten anyone laid.
Well, it turns out years got me laid, man. Like, for real. Got me, you know, married, you know, got me like married for 20, you know, however long we've been together a long time. And like, we've built this life together, and it's like kind of, yeah, it's like light beyond my wildest dreams. But like, you know, Tim, and then I went back there in 2005, and that's kind of when my career started. Like, when I started doing stuff with Phil at the Fader in 2005 for real, mm-hmm, that was when I was like trying to, that was when I was carving out a thing a little bit that was not,
yeah,
like somebody else maybe. You know?
The Fader was a big feeder. I mean, the Fader was known. I mean, we would always joke about the Fader because it was like,
so
they had a white guy on one cover and a black guy on the other cover. You know, yeah, what I mean? It's always the move. But photography wise, it was like pretty ahead of its time, and like kind of, it seemed like it let people cook a lot more than other publications.
I mean, I got
during
lucky.
That era.
I connected with that guy, Phil Bicker, who the first time I went in, I brought him my book. He was like, looked at it. He was like, not interested. Thank you. And then at that point, I had started taking pictures of one of my younger siblings in Long Island. He had gotten kicked out of my dad's house and was living with all these kids and playing in a band. And I was like sending Phil things every week. And he got into it, you know, like, and then he like gave me a portrait, and then he gave me this. And then I was in Vancouver for the first time hanging out with my girl, and he called me. He's like, you want to go shoot Cat Power in Miami? And I was like, yeah, for the cover? And I was like, yeah, I do. And I flew straight to Miami.
Sick.
And almost died because I think, you know, we almost drank, like we drank a bottle of whiskey. And then she was like, oh, just take a Xanax for sleep. And I was like, on, you know, woke up, you know, on her floor, you know, vomiting, and she was vomiting in the bed. You know, it was like,
damn,
it was gnarly. But then went out and took some really beautiful pics right after Hurricane Katrina. That was like post Hurricane Katrina. And then, and that was kind of the beginning. To me, that shoot was like the beginning of people being like, oh, you're not just a ripoff of so and so, you know, like you're not just ripping off that thing, you know.
Yeah, yeah,
oh,
yeah.
You know, and then whatever. It's been like a long journey since then. Like, here I am on your podcast. Like,
yeah, you've
the first pod.
Yeah, you really made it now. No, but I think that I just think that, like, also, I mean, just even being flown to Miami to shoot something is like, that barely happens anymore. You know what I mean? That like barely happens anymore at a certain level, obviously, like it does for you. But I think that era of like, we're going to hire a 25-year-old and send him down there and like let him just do his thing is a little bit, I feel like these creative directors are overstepping. I feel like everybody just wants a hand in it.
It was like wild. I would just show up to Lil Wayne's house and his manager would be like, all right, come on up, you know? And Lil Wayne would just be waking up, putting his shirt on, and he'd be like, you know, you can never do that. Like, I remember when the hard switch happened, it was like, I had shot Odd Future in 2010, kind of before they blew up. Within a year, social media kind of picked up. They were doing the New Yorker piece that Kay wrote, and I shot them for that. And I saw this like change, like this dynamic. And then the next year, it was like later that year, I think I shot it for Spin, and it was even more like,
yeah,
those kids had control.
Right? Yeah, I think that, I mean, I think that's, it happens with, it's the same thing with kind of writing now as well. It's like the time of you spending like 2 days with the subject and like, you know, they're living at the Chateau Marmont and you're living there too. And you're going out to dinner and you're going out to, like, it's just basically like, you got 20 minutes, chief, get what you can is now the new way of doing it. And I just think it's
or you got 20 minutes, chief, here's what you're going to shoot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I also don't mind, because like at the end of the day, like, I just did a thing with Lil Uzi Vert for a magazine. Maybe I shot, you know, 30 minutes total, like in the time that we had him for, we waited for him for 10 hours and he came to set for five, you know, like,
yeah.
But it was worth every minute, because I've gotten down that thing. Like, yeah, just like whatever happens, it's cool. Yeah. You know, like that's the picture.
That's like the cost that you pay in order to shoot arguably the most interesting looking celebrity in the world alive right now.
Literally.
Yeah, you're gonna have to wait 10 hours for them to show up, and it's gonna be worth it.
It's totally like the first picture I got, I was like, oh, that's worth it. I don't need to do anything else. Like,
we're good. We got, you know. All right, we're good. We can go home. We can go on home, guys. We're good.
Yeah, we can go home. It's chill.
He looks so insane.
He looks insane.
Like, how do you not want to just constantly shoot him?
But he's also like the most beautiful person. Like, you kind of like don't realize it, but he's like probably one of the most beautiful people out there.
No, he's also he's also like really sweet and like kind of innocent feeling in this way that, like,
totally.
I was so surprised. Like, I've met him a few times through work stuff, and I was always surprised at how, like, he's just like nice and pretty normal.
Well,
considering what he looks like.
I mean, he did walk up and he had blood running down his face, talked real quiet. I'm ready. And I was like, great, stand there. All right, cool.
So do you think the blood was part of the look, or do you think the blood was like,
honestly, like, it's so interesting. Like, I think in general, like the way people live on the internet these days, they have a million different references for what they're going to do. You know, they just pull from all these things. Like, he had a Gigi Allen t-shirt that he had made, you know, like, I was like, I got the Gigi Allen bobblehead. And he's like, I got the Gigi Allen bobblehead too. And I was like, I got both of them. And I was like, what? You know, I was like, but they're just like, I kind of felt like it was a weird reference to the Andrew W.K. pick by Roe or something, you know, like in his mind, you know, like,
yeah.
But who knows? He probably doesn't know who that is. He probably just saw a picture of somebody like that, and he was like, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and it looks sick.
But I mean, he's the only popular rapper alive right now who even knows who Gigi Allen is, let alone is taking the time to buy bobbleheads on eBay.
To buy a bobblehead and make his own t-shirt. Like, he's like, I'm making a Gigi Allen t-shirt. And it said P asterisk. NKD, you know, it was like such a weird
that is so weird. I mean, I think that, but that's the thing though. I think that, like, those guys, it's so much about like, it's so aesthetic based. It's like, it doesn't even matter what the music sounds like. None of that matters. It's like, I like the way this looks and my fans don't know what this is and I'm going to run with it. Like, I like it for now and that's all that matters.
It's out there.
Freedom.
It looks sick. Yeah. He looked sick. I mean, he looked like it was epic. So yeah, I mean, like when it comes to photo, your assignment world, you know, that I live in a little bit, you know, any which way it goes is kind of cool. Cause as long as you can make a picture within that little, I mean, you don't need a lot of pictures. Let's face it. I think we take a lot of pictures probably, but you don't need a lot.
Yeah. You need one or two winners and we're good.
Yeah. One pick. All right.
Cool. Literally one. Yeah. No, that's when I got this like, automatic medium format camera for fun.
The 645 ZI.
Yeah, that my friend suggested to me, and I'm like, this changed my life. And he was like, watch what happens. You're gonna think 36 pictures is so many, like it's so unnecessary once you go from
what,
like,
is it 12
or whatever,
is it, you know, 12 on that camera or something.
It's
like that?
It's like 16. It's like 16.
Yeah,
but it's still so much less. And he's like, think about 36, 37 pictures on 35 millimeter feels like an eternity now.
Yeah.
Like it feels like you can't burn it fast enough. Like,
ugh, I gotta burn this roll. It's a nightmare.
Yeah, it literally feels like that.
I know. I mean, I'm not like a camera nerd, you know. I like have every camera possible, you know, like film, digital, like I love all of it. But I got rid of my ZI a long time ago. I don't remember what I did with it.
I just you said maybe I bought it
to somebody.
Yeah.
Maybe I think, you bought it.
I think the gear thing's always fun because I think that like people think that's really the trick, you know. And it's like, and we joke about it because Jason and I play tennis and people want to talk about like rackets and shit, and I'm like, guys, none of us are good enough for that to matter.
What's your string tension?
Yeah, it's like, dude, it doesn't matter. And this, I think when people are like, what film do you use, what camera, I'm like, that does not matter. That is not what the job is.
No,
like that is not the skill that we're talking about.
No, not for the job. It matters in like the, every camera has a different feel, or like, you know, Pentax X7, you know, Contax G2, they all have real RZ. I can tell anybody that's using the RZ, I can like look at the pin and be like, look at, they're just using that dumb camera that like I personally have never loved. I have hated forever, you know? But yeah, like it doesn't really matter at the end of the day, you know, if you're really making stuff.
I guess it gives people, I think some people just like stuff. It's like musicians who fucking love guitars. They just like stuff.
Yeah.
It's also very, I know you're a basketball fan. It's the same thing as like, oh, as soon as I buy these LeBrons, I'll be able to.
Dude, I'm going to dunk.
I'll be drafted in the NBA by the end of the day.
I'm going to be drafted.
I'm
going
to dunk.
I'm going to dunk, bro. Do you guys like basketball? You guys like basketball, right?
I don't really care. I mean, I'll watch the playoffs.
We like it, but we don't keep up with it with the feverish interest that you might.
Can you dunk that?
I can't dunk. I can't even dribble. I can barely dribble, bro. I can barely dribble the ball. I can't shoot. No, I'm not like an athlete. I guess that's not true, because like photography is kind of an athletic thing. It is.
This guy.
The squatting. The squatting alone. I get it.
Squatting, weird angles. It's like boxing meets like, I don't know.
Tai Chi.
Bro, I see you, motherfucker. I see you, motherfuckers. You guys sit on Apple boxes, bro, with your legs crossed. Don't act like.
Sometimes.
You're not wearing a weighted vest to shoot little Uzi Vert.
Sometimes. Bro, I got like so many cameras hanging off me, bro.
Did you ever play basketball, or you just like to watch?
I just like to look at numbers, to be honest. Like at the end of the day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like,
you a sports better?
Never have bet anything in my life, but I played fantasy for the past 10 years, and that it's just like I'll watch the playoffs and I'll watch some games during the season. I used to go to more games, but really I just like watching my fantasy numbers like move and fail and go up. And like, it's not, I would say that's where I'm at with it now. For a while. I mean, and I love individual players. Like that's the other thing. I don't really have a team.
No, I think that's the way to do it. And I think that's the way a lot of people are nowadays. Yeah. Like my brother, I have a twin brother. I'm super tall. I'm like 6'9". I have a twin brother who's like 6 feet.
And you didn't get stuck playing basketball? Like they weren't like, no. You are going to play in the NBA.
I in high school, I appeared so unathletic that the coaches didn't even bother asking if I'd like to try out.
His midsection said everything. No,
it was below the belt.
I was wearing a Primus hoodie in eighth grade, yeah, trying to hide from girls, and they're like, "Yeah, he's not really gonna."
But which era? Which era of Primus? Frizzle Fry or?
Yeah, Frizzle Fry.
Okay.
Frizzle Fry, maybe guys, a little Sailing the Seas.
Okay.
But that's not going to get any attention from anyone except for a guy who
Primus,
sells bongs.
Primus
is one of the worst. I mean, whatever. It's not for me. I'm not going to say anything.
So. Like, when you're 13 and you just got into bass guitar,
yes,
Primus is pretty sick.
Did you guys play in bands?
That's true. There's no one else.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. I was in a hardcore band, of course, as a vocalist. I can't play any instruments, but Atlanta was like a big hardcore town growing up. It was a very popular, which it's still, I don't know if you feel this, but we talk about this sometimes on the show, how, like, you know, once I move on from something, I kind of feel like it's over.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's like hardcore is bigger than it ever has been. And people are sending me all these new bands and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just, and they're good. You know, like I listen to them, like, yeah, this is good. But it's tough for me. I just don't have I really do think, like, the teenage angst plays a part in what I'm able to listen to on a daily basis.
Oh, that's funny. I'm sort of the opposite when it comes to that. Like, when it's new and it's good, I'm all in, you know, like, I'm like,
yeah,
that Show Me the Body show. Like, I listened to them, but seeing them live and the optics of the whole thing and how insane the scene was and how much stage, you know, like the presence of that show, like, I was like, well, sign me up for this. And then listening to the record, it changed the whole record to me and it changed the way they sounded.
Yeah.
You know? Like I said, I like bad music, like, you know. Like, when the new wave of emo started popping off for me in 2015, Modern Baseball kind of came to town, and I saw their first show, Basement Irving Plaza. I was like, this is better than anything before it, you know? Like, and it's just,
This is it.
This is this Taking Back Sunday, who? You know, like, whatever.
Well, Jason, on the subject of maybe original legacy 90s emo bands, you got to pick one Desert Island 90s emo band. Ooh. Maybe play at your wedding or something like that. Who's it going to be?
Ooh,
from the real era.
Ooh, American Football. Is it going to be an American Football?
Yeah.
Oh, you're one of those guys. Okay, you're an American Football guy.
Or Jawbreaker. Is it Jawbreaker? Like, if you're going to go back to the 80s, like 88, when I got the first Jawbreaker 7-inch at Bleeger Bob's, and like kind of like was like, okay, maybe this is it, you know? Maybe this is the thing.
I mean, Jawbreaker is legendary.
It's so weird. I was never Jawbreaker pilled. I'm more of a Texas Is the Reason Sunny Day Real Estate guy.
Sunny Day, like, I can get on Sunny Texas. I could not, because I think at that point I was,
what do you,
like,
mean you could, what do you mean,
awful,
what's the problem,
and painful. Seeing them live was the problem, like watching them. I was like, what is going on?
Yeah, they're kind of swagless.
My girlfriend at the time was into it. I was like, this is awful.
Where do you land on Promise Ring?
Never really was a big Promise Ring guy.
Yeah, I understand.
What about Tim Kinsella's first band, like
Captain Jazz?
Yeah, like, I can roll with that.
I was pretty into Captain Jazz.
Yeah, Captain Jazz, classic.
Yeah, classic.
I also think a lot of that stuff, I mean, all that polyvinyl stuff from that era looks so cool. Like, it's interesting to look back at all that and see how ahead of its time it was, like, design-wise. It really had, like, a language to it. And in a cool way, not, like, Victory Records way. You know what I mean?
Well, slow down,
oh, my God.
You know what I mean? Like, design-wise, it, like, looked like something. It looked cohesive. Let me say that.
Yeah, it was artistic.
It was.
It fit in with the... It was very graphic design centric, you know. Everybody was going to Rhode Island. But I'm literally wearing a Blade shirt right now, like, you know, whatever.
Drain Gang.
You guys are too old for this Drain Gang stuff. I'm sorry to tell you.
Dude, I went to go see Wicked Phase on Saturday night in this weird club with my wife. It was date night. Our kid was home with the grandparents. And he played the first part of his set. He played all new songs for like 20 minutes. And then he started in with the old jams, and song three, somebody, like, all of a sudden, like, it seems like a fight's breaking out, and we look over and he stops. And then the bouncer is dragging this kid out, like walking him out. And the kid just falls flat on his face. Club kind of clears out a little bit. My wife jumps in and starts giving the kid mouth to mouth.
Whoa.
And the kid is not breathing, you know, totally out on the floor. All of a sudden she's like yelling for Narcan, gives the kid 2 Narcans, wakes him up.
Dude, it was
fucking insane. Show shut down. Like, I have pictures of the kid like waking up, and I felt like, thank God, you know. And then the show ended, and but that's what happens at emo shows, man. You never know. You just never
that is not what happens at emo shows. People overdose on like hugs at emo shows.
I don't know if he was even high. Like, we don't even know. Like, it just, he might have, it was so hot inside.
He might have just been so depressed that the Narcan kind of woke him up out of his funk.
Yeah, he
was. I don't know, like, dude. It was really sad, but it was wild to see.
That's wild. I thought Narcan only worked if you like needed it to work. Does that make sense? Like,
I asked my wife about it, and she said, it doesn't matter if you give Narcan to somebody, like, if they haven't used drugs, like, it doesn't affect them in a bed. Like, that's what she had mentioned.
Oh, I see. Okay, I see.
Whatever it was, like, whatever the combination of things she had done to, like, get that kid to wake up, he woke up.
Damn, that's amazing.
Hopefully he's okay. We kind of left. Her adrenaline rush was pretty high in the car ride home.
Of course.
You know, I saw something like this recently, and like, where like a doctor or nurse just like kind of comes, you know, something happens on the street and all of a sudden they just snap into it. And it literally just makes me think about how worthless I am. Like how worthless I am.
I know. We're like podcasting, talking about me and this is what it's like to shoot rappers.
Yeah, but you're like married to somebody who does that. So you kind of see that juxtaposition every day.
A life of service. Yeah, she like literally lives a life of service for people. Yeah. Like,
I mean, that just reminds me of those memes where somebody's like, is there a doctor here? And like your wife is literally giving somebody CPR mouth to mouth, Narcanning, and you're like, I'm a street style photographer. I'll shoot him.
I'm like,
and
what's up?
I won't publish them if he dies. If he lives, then I'll shoot, you know.
Then they're going to end up in. I remember that happened one time in like early Vice era, not probably early Vice era, but like 2002 or three. Jesse published some pictures of mine, and some kid was passed out, I think, on the subway, but then. You know, I don't know. Maybe he died. I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
But then people that saw the pictures were like, you can't run those pictures. And Jesse called. He was like, bro, if anybody calls, like, just tell him like you didn't know. And I was like, all right, man. But it was, yeah.
You're so, like, I didn't know what. What's happening?
Didn't know what. I don't know. It was
I don't
was
know
Halloween,
what you're talking about, bro.
Man.
I was just.
It was Halloween.
I just saw Jesse recently, actually. We had a nice little catch up.
Oh, cool. Right on.
Lovely guy. One of the greats, really.
I mean, definitely like original Gen X. OG Gen X vibes to me.
That's who I'm looking to spend my time with, because there's nothing I want to be more than Gen X, but I'm off by a handful of years.
You're off by a few months, right?
Yeah. Well, Chris, the rich one, you want to spend time with the rich one.
Yeah, just the rich ones. Only the ones that have made it. Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
yeah. I don't want to talk to the losers. No, only the ones that are cool and rich. Yeah.
I caught the Gen X nihilism bug, so I'm good. I'm safe. We can hang.
But I feel like you hang out? Do you spend a lot of time? I mean, besides the kid Leroy, do you spend a lot of time with young people, or are you around your peers?
Funny, like I have. So, like I said, I'm in the middle of these 9 kids. So, like,
yeah,
my younger siblings are all in their 20s, you know, and early 30s.
Okay.
So, like, my sister lives a few blocks away. She's 24, you know. So, yeah, I have like young kids around my life. You know, like the guy that works for me is 28. He's on the cusp of what, like Gen Z and Gen. And millennial. He's definitely a millennial cusp. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, I have young people around. Like I like to stay connected, man, to all the youths.
Sure.
You know?
What are your younger siblings? Do they think you're a freak? Or
no,
like he
man,
made it?
They're cool. Like so like they all grew up in the city.
Oh, okay.
And so I was there. I went to school at FIT and then I went to Parsons and kind of didn't graduate and then eventually graduated in like 2009, you know. But I like went back to finish my degree when my wife moved here.
How did you not become an artist, you know?
Yeah, you didn't have a choice, dude. You didn't really have a choice.
There was not much else. I mean, like I got lucky, dude. Like the guy in high school that got me into FIT like saved my life, kind of. My painting teacher or my photography teacher at the time like literally was like either I stay in Long Island and just become like a total like just drink and drive into a wall or something, you know? Or like go live at FIT, you know, like go to FIT maybe you'll get live in the dorm. And then that kind of saved my life, you know?
Yeah. We've had a few like professors and like teachers on before. And I'm always like, how often do you see somebody in one of your classes and you're like, they actually have it? And they're like, it's so rare. Yeah. They're like, it's incredibly rare for anyone to have skills that I should actually push them to pursue. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like it's really hard. It's really rare. Like,
yeah, it's true. And I'm such a like cynic in that way where I'm like, did I have it or did I just like, you know, what is having? And it's like, I had the ability. I had the curiosity. Cause then when I got to FIT, like I started working for this dance photographer. Like I almost couldn't afford to stay at FIT. And then the funny thing, like the week before I left school, my mom in the afternoon was kind of drinking and kind of drunk and we were hanging out and I was about to move into FIT. I'd found out that I'd gotten a dorm spot. Mm-hmm. And she told me this story about my childhood that I didn't know. Like I didn't realize my mom and dad were never married and all this other drama around it. Like I had grown up the first 18 years and thought they were married and got a divorce, like kind of traditional.
Yeah, yeah.
But it like turned out there was a lot of other parts to that story that I found out, which I probably didn't need to know because it just fueled my anger even further out into the world, like towards humanity.
I probably could have kept that to yourself. You know, you didn't
really need to know. Yeah, like right before I'm leaving, moving a few blocks from dad. So now I really hate him and I kind of hate you and like for now. And then I like got to FIT and so what that worked out for me because then we could apply for financial aid and say, hey, we haven't been in touch with this guy financially. We have no support. And so FIT was paid for. And I ended up working for this photographer who lived on top of Strand and he had this insane book collection. And he basically hired me to clean his house and the studio and the dark room. And when I wanted to take breaks, I could look at books. And so I had like this access to like 18 years old. And I had access to like every good photo book that like William Eggleston or Robert Frank or Stephen Chu or anything at that time, he had it, you know? And I was like, you know, Winograd books. And I was like, okay, well, you know, here's my education, you know? And it just opened me up. He like, you know, for better or worse, kind of changed my life too. So I have a couple, like after having a kind of 18 years of kind of like strangeness, there's other stories that I probably shouldn't get into that happened there.
So did you have to do the cleaning with your shirt off? Is that what you're kind of getting at? Or
you know what I mean? Like there was some grooming maybe going on there, you know, and it didn't end well.
Did you clean all the lenses, Jason?
I cleaned all the lenses at the studio. Nah, and he had four daughters. Like it was there was cool things about being there. And I worked in a studio. I eventually started printing and I was a printer for a long time. I was actually a black and white printer.
Yeah.
Probably from like 93 to 99 or 2001 was the last time I worked, or 2003 was the last time I worked in a darkroom for a living. And then that's when I started taking photos for commercial stuff. You know, I'd always been taking photos before that, but 2003, I think was the year that I like, really tried to hammer it out. And then, you know, still trying to figure it out. Like it's ever evolving, man. It's like ever changing and like staying in it. Is fun, but it's like you're like, what is it? What is it now? Like, what are we doing now? Like,
no, it's always no. It's a moving target. It's know? A moving target. As are a lot of things in life.
Yeah, you know,
as are a lot of things in life.
Totally.
It seems like you're doing all the right things to stay on track, though, Jason.
So far, so good.
That's all. I mean, that's all we can do, dude.
No, nah, man. It's like I'm lucky. Like I said at the beginning, like you know, and like again, 8 years ago, like quitting, you know, drinking and all that kind of stuff, like. You know, I needed to do that to survive this, you know, like kind of, and also like open my life up to like this new chapter with this kid, which has been a sort of like, I don't know, like makes everything else seem silly, you know, like hanging out with that kid makes everything else.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too sentimental about it, but maybe cut that out. No. Get rid of that part.
Cut out the part where I said I like
yeah,
my
the
kid.
Part where you said you love your daughter. We're gonna need to lose that if you guys don't mind.
It's... We were at an emo show this weekend. I'm hard. But yeah, no, like literally like my favorite thing is to like wake up to that kid screaming for her mom and then like tell me to get away, you know. Get away.
I think that's how it goes.
Not you. Not
I think that's
you.
How it goes for a lot of fathers.
Yeah.
And you're like, babe, you know, the kids said it, you know, you should probably go wake her up, not me, you know.
you can take care of this.
I'll finish my coffee.
When we found out we were having a girl, I was like, well, that's what I wanted because she's gonna love me and hate you. You know, like it's hasn't proven to be true yet, but
this is the plan. Wait till she's a teenager.
It'll happen.
Yeah, you got time.
Exactly. Exactly.
Jason, thank you for joining us on How Long Gone today. And
thanks for having me.
No, it was a pleasure, dude. It was a pleasure. And I'm sure I'll see you in your stroller on the block soon.
On the streets.
On the streets.
All right.
I'll see you soon, man. Appreciate it, Jason. Thanks again.
See you in the future, guys. Thanks, man. Bye.
Thanks, bro.